You're listening to Cosmic Tonic.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let me say that again.
Cosmic Tonic.
Hello. Thanks for tuning in to the Cosmic Tonic podcast. In this episode, we speak with astrologer, somatic movement educator, yoga teacher, and artist Renee Sills about astrology and the body. If you like what we do, please leave us a 5-star rating, write a review, or share the podcast with your friends. We appreciate it. And there's a couple different ways you can listen to us. One way is on your favorite podcast app or by subscribing to us on YouTube. As you know, we are committed to bringing you the best content related to astrology and the occult. We are fully funded by listener support, so please donate to our podcast by visiting the link at the bottom of our homepage, or you can book a reading with us by visiting the links at the top of our homepage at cosmictonic.com. For those of you who've donated or booked readings, thank you so much. It really helps us keep this podcast going. Thanks again for being here, and we hope you enjoy the show. Okay, we are here with Renee Sills from Embodied Astrology, and we're really excited to talk about astrology and the body with her today. She is a consulting astrologer, a somatic educator, and an artist. And why don't you tell us, Renee, how you found astrology or how astrology found you and how you merge all these modalities and practices together?
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like I was gifted a lot of inheritance from my mom. She was an astrologer. She was also a therapist and an herbalist and a body worker. And I grew up speaking the language of astrology with her, or she would speak it with me a lot. So it's just always part of the environment and the ways that we talked about the world and about ourselves. And then when I was about 12 years old, I went through a period in my life that I would say was pretty challenging for everybody involved. And instead of pursuing, I would say, a more status quo therapeutic or remediation path with me, my mom got me involved with a dance therapist and a couple of other somatic mentors. And in some ways gave me an ultimatum, like it was a little bit of a force feeding of somatics at first. But by the time I was 15, it was very much a part of my life and something that was continuous from that point forward. In my late teens and early 20s, I started studying with a lot of sincerity and passion about yoga and also yoga and astrology. Of course, they share a root. And it was at that point that I also read my first Western astrology book. I read Liz Green's Relating, going through some tough times in a relationship. And a lot of things started to click for me around the intersection of astrological archetypal energy and bodily patterns, and also how to work with bodily patterns through movement and breath and kind of somatic awareness practices as remediation and support for challenging astrological energies. And I would say that that link was quite intuitive, but not articulated for me for a long time. And then it became more articulated in 2014 when I started to put the two together, teaching some workshops. But during that whole time, I was in art school and, you know, I've received such generous and gracious inheritance from my mom. But I also feel my own identity as kind of an artist and a punk and, someone that really does not thrive in institutional settings and needs to do my own thing and kind of go my own way. And I don't think I'm well suited for a career that has a very clear boundary around it. So there was a time when I tried to go on a path of doing movement therapeutics and movement repatterning work. There was a time when I tried a clear path of using my art degrees. And I've also tried to be a cut and dry astrologer, and none of it really works for me. I kind of have to find my own synthesis and be in a space with work that is also conducive to constant evolution and change. So embodied astrology has been born from there, and it's an ongoing project and path of practice, and at this point is becoming a community project. And yeah, I'll see where it continues to go, but that's how I got here.
Well, I'm curious. You were talking. I was listening to one of your podcasts actually this morning with a resident, and I was interested. Could you tell us a little bit more about some of the particulars of embodied astrology? There's this tea time, this synthesis space, and I was so inspired listening to Katie as well, and curious what your vision is around that. It sounds like there's just a lot of support for other people who are, maybe following in your footsteps a little bit and don't necessarily meet the status quo with fitting into a career path, but being more multidisciplinary. So I'd love to hear about that because we have a lot, I think, of healers and astrologers and therapist types who listen to our podcast.
So embodied astrology has been mostly my project up until now and beginning in 2022. And I was looking at my own transits, kind of trying to plan for what was coming. I'm a Leo rising, so a lot of that, Saturn's work and upcoming Pluto transit in my seventh house and in Aquarius and Uranus moving through my 10th, to me has really resonated with an instinct that I've had my whole life, which is to hold and tend and initiate community spaces. My work with somatics and my training in that field has really illuminated that every body is unique and quite different, even though we're all very similar. And I learned over and over that, any treatment or path of healing for an individual is going to have to be individualized, and it's going to have to be resonant with that person. And, somebody doesn't feel connected with what they're doing, they won't do it, or it won't work, it won't be effective. And I feel like with astro, it's similar. This is a symbolic language that has been in development for thousands of years, and the meanings around the symbols have changed a lot at different times, with different eras, with different methodologies, depending on who's practicing and where in the world and what's going on politically, etc. And I feel like for me, a lot of my journey with astrology has been a deconstruction journey. I bow to my teachers and the teachers of my teachers and the authors of the books that I have read. And, it's a limited slice of the population who can access publishing. And up until this point, I think in fairly recent years, the majority of contributors to the astrological canon have been men. They've been European men. They've been white men. A lot of them have been Christian. A lot of them have come from a, fairly privileged class background. And even with the women who are writing, I feel like there's still a very narrow kind of slice of experience that they're able to speak from, as amazing as they are. So I think as a queer person and as a, as a person who's worked in healing realms with a lot of folks who don't meet normative standards for whatever reasons. You know, like I've worked with people across the kind of body ability spectrum, the neurological spectrum. I've worked with people who are many different ages, who come from really different racial, ethnic, and class backgrounds, and of course, a very extended queer and trans community. And I feel like a lot of time what I'm doing is reinterpreting symbolism for the folks that I'm working with, because there's something, if not a lot of things, that aren't quite aligned in relationship between the, you know, the symbol or the kind of cookbook interpretation that's out there, and then the body who's actually in my presence. And for me as a practitioner, this illuminates the fact that I, in my experience, only have my bodily experience to move through. And so my interpretations are also going to be limited. They're also going to be biased. And I've been very committed to cultivating a practice that works through the somatic sense and the felt sense as a way to be more generous with description and with experience for people that I'm working with. But I also feel like that's not enough, that there needs to be space that is radical and inclusive and affirmative for folks as they develop their own relationship to the symbolic language. And so that's how I've been teaching for the last couple of years. When I teach astrology, I don't teach people what something means, period, end. I give some offerings and then we do somatic exploration and experiential work. And there's listening space, and everything that's offered in terms of personal experience is affirmed. And it's held as, you know, a contribution to a growing intelligence of what astrology could speak to. And so the embodied astrology community space opened this year at the beginning of 2022. It is a virtual community space in social media. There are varying levels of tiers that people can join at. And the tea time tier is the kind of entry point tier for folks who really want to engage with community. So if people want to just tune in with me with my horoscopes or workshops, they can do that. But if they want to come into the community, there are options for them to get involved. And tea time is our once a month meeting that is very emergent. We see what is alive in the group and we kind of follow those threads. It's a really beautiful conversation space, and it's a space where a lot of people get to share and echo and reflect to one another in terms of what gets shared. Starting this year, the synthesis space research residency also opened. And this is a space that I've been dreaming for the last year. And also, as creative projects go, I'm sure plenty of people can relate to this. Like, I was dreaming it, but didn't know what it would be until it started. And now that it's begun and it's happening, I feel like, you know, I'm learning what it's going to be, and it's in process. So, as a young person, I felt like I was very supported by elders who and mentors who were affirming of my own synthesis. Like, they would listen to me, and I would have, you know, this interest over here and that interest over there, and I'd want to do all the things, and they would just go, okay, let me help you. You know, like I didn't get a lot of feedback like that's too much or that's a crazy idea or you need to pick something. And because I had those people in my life, when I did get that other kind of feedback, I could block it. And I could kind of listen for, is there anything wise here? I didn't always listen for that, but you know, I felt really supported to do my own thing in the world. And that has allowed me to do my own thing and to create a work and livelihood for myself that I deeply enjoy. And it feels like part of my ministry on earth to hold space for that with other people. And it's a dream that I've cherished for a long time, is to be able to have the resources to do that. So when embodied astrology started making money a couple of years ago, this residency was kind of one of the first things beyond, you know, tithing and reparation payment. This was like the first kind of thing that I was like, okay, I want to do that. And the idea was to have a funded residency space to pay someone for their time and to give them mentorship, to give them support on the platform, to teach, to hold, you know, research space or studio time. I think that there is a lot of pressure for those of us who are self-employed on the internet to have a brand and to know what we are doing and to have it really clear. But I know for myself, it's a long process of trial and error and needing to experiment. And I have definitely experienced that experimentation with other people is really helpful. Like getting feedback and being able to be in process is very helpful. So I wanted to hold a space for someone where they would have comfort and support to be able to do that. And Katie Henderson had been a member of the Tea Time space. So Tea Time started last year. The kind of community space and the new virtual platform opened this year, but the meetings have been going for a while. And Katie had been there, I think since the beginning of 2021. And immediately when I met Katie, I felt like this is a cousin, you know, like this is like my kindred. They are a dancer, a singer, a performing artist. Katie is also deeply soulful, deeply spiritual, and brings a lot of their backgrounds, kind of growing up in the church, in the Black church in the South, but also being a queer person who didn't find home in that space and has needed to define home and define spiritual practice and worship in her own way. She's a sex worker and a sex educator and a birth worker and a doula and an incredible astrologer. And I was so inspired by the way Katie really intuitively, really naturally interprets astrology and connects with it. So Katie was my assistant for a workshop in the summer of 2021, the Your Chart is a Body workshop, which is also now online as a kind of standalone course. And it was so easy for us to work together. And I was in this process of trying to create this residency. And so I invited Katie to create it with me and to be in an emergent process together and to, yeah, like design it and feel into it. And so we started discussing the residency last September. We spent the last quarter of the year kind of feeling into it, moving through ideas, and then it officially started in January. And it's been better than I ever imagined. Like I don't know what I imagined. I had high hopes, but Katie's become a really close friend. And that has felt particularly healing for me. I think, like a lot of people, I've experienced mentors as a hierarchy sometimes and a feeling of, you know, a mentor, especially if they're older, if they're more experienced, like I'll defer to them and I'll feel like I want to impress them, I want to please them. And there's often like a, yeah, you know, there are limits to our relationships, there are certain boundaries that maybe sometimes are important. And I've also experienced with my mentors a feeling of frustration sometimes that they feel inaccessible as friends. And particularly in the realms of yoga and spirituality, I've experienced this a lot where my older mentors take on kind of a guru status and, you know, I can't reach them as a human. And that's never been my style. So yeah, I feel really excited that Katie has become a colleague and a teacher of mine and a good friend and someone that I also turn to and rely on when it comes to expanding my own interpretations and thinking through symbols and thinking about life. And it's been very satisfying to be in a mentor role as a person who is older and who has more experience and resources to feel like I can you know, I have Mars in Cancer in the 12th house. I'm like, I want to support people to know themselves and to feel like I get to do that with Katie. And yeah, and that it is like such a deeply reciprocal relationship has been really fun. And Katie's offerings on the synthesis space and with EA so far, she's done one standalone workshop and has begun a series of other workshops on eulogy practice, working with the Jupiter-Neptune conjunction. They have been absolutely fantastic and really, really different from the kind of space that I hold, and so complementary and so necessary. And the response has been wonderful. And it just feels really exciting to be, friends with a person who's going through their Saturn return and figuring out how to form their synthesis, like their very unique offering. Katie's bringing together so many different streams of intelligence and intuition and wisdom and facilitation and space holding. And the capacity that she has to hold space is, it's incredible. And like, it doesn't need to get squashed by the bullshit that seems to squash people, you know, of like, okay, where's the box that you fit in? Give us a clear definition. What's your brand? You know, like all this stuff. It feels really exciting to, you know, to be able to offer support that is like, yeah, no, I see you in your unique intersection. I've also been through that experience of trying to build something and form something and figure out how to language it. And here's some time and here's some money and here's like my phone number. And let's just, you know, let's just give this time to ripen and emerge. And you don't need to rush it and you don't need to fake anything and you don't need to doubt your own capacity. You know, because I think a lot of us, and I know this is true in the healing realm, we are very creative. And it's only in modernity that there has been a separation between art and healing. I think in all indigenous cultures across the world, art and healing go together. They are part of the same thing. And it is a creative praxis to be channeling healing energy and to be meeting people and holding healing space. Yeah, for me, you know, as a multidimensional healer, I feel like I need a lot of time and support to trust my own instinct and wisdom and tune in with what feels like my offering. And then, yeah, it feels absolutely incredible to be able to do that in community and hold space for other people with that as well. So I don't know where we're going. I have some ideas with EA, but I do hope that over the next year or two, it becomes much more of a community platform. And I love my job and I want to keep offering what I offer, but I also am excited to decenter myself in that space and broaden the circle. And yeah, that feels really exhilarating to me. It feels inspiring. And yeah, this is my long answer.
It is something I really was marveling at with your website, that it does seem like a collaborative art space as much as it is an invitation to enter healing work with you. I think this is really fascinating, this intersection between the body and astrology. It, first of all, as you have noted and as you indicate on your website, this is not new. You know, we have mapped astrology onto our bodies for many hundreds of years. And at the same time, I feel like astrology itself is a modality that can be so cerebral, and we can get so caught in the weeds of the details, and especially when we're still learning. And it can be really easy, and I'm maybe speaking autobiographically here, but it can be really easy, I think, to use astrology to actually divorce yourself from the somatic experience of what you're feeling, of your emotion, of your own inner landscape. It can be really easy to project that onto the language. And I think that's part of its soothing power in some ways, but it can also be a way to eject. So I wondered, Renee, if you could comment on that and maybe comment on how you create that bridge between astrology and between our bodies, maybe for your clients or as an artistic practice or just in general?
Thank you. I love that question. Yeah, I agree. I think astrology has so much to offer in the way that it can externalize something and that we can in some ways separate from our experience and see it through the lens of archetype and symbolism and cyclical, you know, energy or cyclical nature. And absolutely, I experience this all the time that it is yet another method for disembodiment and kind of cerebral detachment. So for me, I feel like, you know, again, it's a synthesis. So my practice as an astrologer is deeply informed by my practice as a somatic educator and also as a sensate intuitive. And I claim that for myself with the kind of, you know, acknowledgement that if you spend enough time cultivating felt sense and tuning in with your somatic awareness, you'll become a sensate intuitive because we are intelligent instruments. Our bodies are very intelligent. We know what's going on. and all of the archetypal energy that is described through the astrological chart, I feel as vibration, as posture, as a tonal quality, an energetic emotional mood. And it obviously comes through in behavioral and relationship patterns and the mental, emotional, kind of holistic body, right, that includes all these different realms. And so when I work with myself and also when I work with other people, my question is always like, who is this? You know, like who do we become or who is this part of me when I'm tuning in with these energies? And not just how do I talk about it and describe it and justify it, but how does it feel? How does it act and enact? And usually that question in its simplicity is big enough for the process. And working with clients, this is often a question, you know, where we'll describe something, we'll look at something, we'll be like, oh, you know, okay, Venus square Pluto, you know, let's get into your relationships. Like, how, like what happens to you when your attachment system gets threatened? You know, like what happens to you when you experience anger, competitiveness, jealousy, insecurity, etc.? And that's the place where we pause and check in with the felt sense. And then we'll create a link between the cerebral description, the mental understanding of what an aspect means and how it actually feels in the body. Because that's where the work can get done, right? Is how it feels in the body. And those are the first cues. And they're not, we can't always catch them. I've certainly had experiences in my life, you know, where I'm gripped in a pattern and I can't catch it. And having the complement of astrology with the bodily pattern is super helpful because, of course, as we all know, there are times in our lives when we're getting tough transits or when our natal aspects are getting stimulated in such a way that we're under it, we're going through it, where it's like shit is happening. And to have the astrology to then provide a mirror and a reflection of, oh, this is how I'm feeling. And then to have some skill in, okay, this is the body pattern. How do I support this body pattern to, you know, X, Y, or Z, like get more grounded, feel more integrated, open up some space, ask for some support. That then leads into what is this astrological pattern and how do I manifest it to its highest potential? Because I think that that's also a place where, in my experience, people get really locked up with astro is they're like, oh, this is what this means. You know, oh, you have Venus square Pluto, you are fucked. And it's like, no, actually, you know, the Venus square Pluto as a natal aspect or as a transit can lead to really profound capacity to work through the depths of emotional process and the fear that emotion can bring up. You might become, you know, a totally powerful healer when it comes to love and relationship and connection or something like that, because you can work through these intensely challenging realms of shadow. But if you don't necessarily have that framework and then the tools and the kind of skill set or vocabulary to move between the embodied experience and the concept, then I think you can get locked in the concept. So for me, the body experience is the way that I work with astrology as a process, you know, as a place where we grow and get to know ourselves.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm intrigued by so much of what you said, but both when I saw it on your website and when you mentioned it not long ago, I feel really inspired and curious when you talk about postures. And I'm wondering if you could go into more detail about how you incorporate postures into your mm-hmm. practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Yeah, postural work is kind of a foundation of the work that I do as a somatic educator and doing movement repatterning. So postural patterns are genetic, entrained, practiced, sometimes stimulated through trauma, and also can be cultivated and evolve. So a lot of postural patterns organize around disorganization or dis-ease. And this can be genetic, entrained, inherited, practiced, injured, traumatized, etc. So let's say, you know, someone has experienced abuse in their early childhood environment. We know that abuse within families or personality patterns, etc., is not about the person, that it's something larger, that we're looking at larger family dynamics and cultural dynamics and all the intersecting layers, etc. And the posture of someone who's experienced abuse in early childhood will reflect it, right? So there will be some kind of guarding in the posture. There will be a protective pattern. And the posture also may get triggered or stimulated in particular times. So if this person is now an adult and say that they are trying to date, trying to find a new relationship, and oh, here's a red flag, you know, or here's something that's coming up that this resonates for me in a way that stimulates my pain pattern, my body will go right into its holding, you know, it'll go right into its defense mechanism. So I'll give myself as an example, as a person who did grow up with an abusive parent who was psychologically and verbally abusive. I was not physically abused, but I did develop a very strong postural pattern of guarding myself from the words that were coming at me, from, you know, anger and yelling and cruelty that was coming at me verbally. And this postural pattern for me shows up in all kinds of places. It shows up in an instant if I think that I've done or said anything wrong. It shows up when someone gives me a look that I read for any number of reasons as not approving. It shows up in experiences where I'm directly being confronted. And it will certainly show up if I'm in a room with the parent who was abusive. And so when this pattern shows up, what happens to me is I get an incredible amount of condensing through my body. My chest gets really tight. My breathing stops. And I basically feel like my energy body leaves my physical body. And I go up and out through my forehead. And it's like my eyes get really big and my head moves forwards because I'm tracking, right? Like I'm in a state of hypervigilance and sympathetic response. And all kinds of other physiological symptoms will emerge, right? Like I'll start to sweat in certain ways. I can get a little shaky sometimes. So I could spend the rest of my life deconstructing that psychological pattern. But if I go right to the somatic pattern, then what I have is an opportunity to resource myself. So in that psychological pattern, when I feel my eyes are getting really big and my head is jutting forward and I have tightness in my belly and I don't feel grounded, then I work with my posture, right? Like I'm paying attention to where my body is meeting the ground. I'm tuning into my back body. I'm trying to pull my energy back in. I might use my touch, right, to bring my hands to my chest or my belly. I might close my eyes to bring my awareness back internal. I have any number of guides or allies or loving memories that I could draw on to help regulate myself in that moment. But it's often a clue for me if I'm feeling uptight or triggered or scared, because a lot of times I don't know that that's how I'm feeling. You know, like it's not, I might be going into a meeting that I'm excited about and also worried that I'm going to say the wrong thing, right? And so I could have a simultaneous experience of excitement while my body is already going into a pattern of constriction and defense. And that somatic pattern will then affect my mental capacity and my ability to attune empathically with the people who I'm with, and therefore my performance, right, in the meeting. So if I can keep a kind of gauge on my body patterns and notice when familiar patterns come up, then I have more capacity to work with them and to stay attuned. And again, obviously, I think it depends on the situation or the level of trauma or trigger involved. But it is helpful in that way. And just to say one other thing, you know, I think when it comes to aspects and placements, there are often postures that go with them, you know, and and the postures might change person to person, but energetically they can have a very similar feeling to them. For example, I just the other day had a client, a cis male client, who had Mars and Aries conjunct his midheaven, you know, and that postural pattern of Mars and Aries is like fucking confident. And he walked with a tall chest, you know, and felt entitled to express sexuality and desire and to move through the world in a certain way. And that postural pattern will also have moments of detriment, you know, when he gets into situations like where maybe a little more humility or calmness might be called for. But I think that just kind of identifying like the aspect and then helping a client feel in their body, you know, oh, you know how you feel like you can take on the world, you know how you feel like you got this, and like, what is that? What happens for you, you know, in your breath and your bodily energetic and in your mind? What happens when you turn the dial up on that, when you just got that new motorcycle you're going to ride, you know, like, how do we feel into these body states that are basically containers for this matrix of energetic coding that the astrology chart conveys?
There's just so much that you're saying that is resonating. so hard. But I'm really curious, when you're working with somebody or a client, what is that entry point into the natal chart of really understanding how the natal chart merges with the body and the experiences of somebody? Is there something specific, or are you just kind of extracting their subjective experience to, and then looking at the chart to prescribe what needs to happen as far as next steps?
Mm-hmm. Well, I always will start any reading asking a client what they want out of the reading. Mm-hmm. I'm not particularly invested in just giving a reading or trying to impress someone with how much I can see in their chart. So I always want to start with where someone's at, and whether or not they know what they want out of the reading, the transits and the progressions are there. Those are usually the charts that I'm reading. So yeah, if a client knows what they want, it's going to show up in the transits and the progressions, and it would probably be what I would tune in with, anyway, not always, but a lot of the times. And if they don't know what they want, I'll start with what's getting stimulated currently in the chart. I don't give natal chart readings in the sense of like, I'm going to go through your chart and tell you who you are. I'm always wanting to work in the present moment. And the chart is huge. I don't think, you know, if I was just going to try and describe the natal chart without talking about now, I would get confused. So the chart is huge. We'll just tune in with where we are today. And Yeah, for me, it's really important to tune in and to check in. And so I'll talk for a while. I'll say what I see. I'll ask, does this resonate? Does this click for you? Is there anything that's pinging that you want to share with me? And then usually at some point, there are questions around either how does this feel when this comes up for you? Can you describe what's happening in your body? Description from me. And so as a sensei intuitive, I feel the chart often through my body. Like I'll see an aspect and I'll get a feeling. I see you nodding. It's like, I think we do this as astrologers. It's like, you look at that Venus square Pluto and you're like, whoa, shit. Like I can feel that. And so I might describe in my language, okay, when, I'm seeing this coming up in your chart, this is the feeling that's coming up for me. I'll describe the posture. Oh, when this thing happens, this is what I notice. Then I'll ask, do you know what I'm talking about? Does that click for you? Does it resonate? Do you want to let me know more about that pattern? And so then in that way, we'll decipher the chart together, and we'll also bring in tools. We'll bring in skills for, okay, so this is the feeling that's coming up. When this happens, these are some ideas for how you could resource yourself or how you could use this energy or something like that. But it's always very much a conversation. And yeah, I think it feels really important to me to check in and make sure that what I'm saying is landing. And again, that's part of my own quote unquote, like a little bit of a trauma history with intuitives and psychics and astrologers, you know, that are like, blah, 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 this is you. And meanwhile, in my internal experience, I'm like, not quite, you know, I'm like, I paid you for this session. Could you check in?
Yeah, which is so beautiful hearing how you work with this process, because feeling seen and feeling felt, I think it goes such a long way for our clients. And, you know, I see the chart as a full integration. I think people are already so whole, but then doing what you're doing, if the way I'm understanding it, it's like you can name it conceptually and then really play with the real life experience and embodiment of that. And it's almost like becomes a superpower of when somebody's in a moment, they can name that area of the life, maybe even, and take your resources in a way where, okay, actually I have a choice to do something different here. Cause I'm always interested in like, okay, cool. There's so much illumination and insight here, but how do we like live it in a practical, tangible way that's really moving our lives forward? And so it's really coming alive as you're describing that. So thank you for sharing. And it's bringing it alive for me too. It's almost like you're naming for me what I'm actually having put language to what I'm doing in my practice, because I'm a psychotherapist and have all these somatic experiencing. And I'm like asking myself constantly, like, how am I really using the astrology?
Yeah.
You know, and why is it making a difference? Because I'm not here to waste your time, but I'm also not here to tell you who you are. I really want what you were saying at the beginning, that permissiveness and not reducing people and remaining curious. Like, here's your offerings. This is how it might show up, but how is it really showing up for you?
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's something unique to discover here, or maybe it pings something of like, oh my gosh, that's where it came from ancestrally or from my childhood. And oh my gosh, when I'm with somebody else, I feel more secure. Like I actually don't feel that way in my body. I'm actually being told I'm safe. I'm okay. Like the ground has me, the universe has me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's such a natural pairing of psychology and astrology. And I wish more therapists used astro, because it is such a map. And the chart for me is just this kind of set of operating instructions. It's like you get these keys, you know, and again, how we decipher or interpret them needs to be held with a lot of complexity and openness and open-mindedness around what they could mean. But my experience with clients is that reflection and witnessing and kind of offering of, this is what I see, how do you feel it for you, is usually a huge portal. It's a huge opening and a huge relief, because a lot of times I think what we're naming as astrologers are feelings and patterns and experiences that folks have a hard time acknowledging and articulating for themselves, because people are idiosyncratic paradoxes of complexity, you know, and we're all, it's like, we're all like struggling with the status quo and like normative formulas of who we should be and other people's ideas of what is quote unquote right. And we're all our own people. And I think when folks are really supported to know themselves and advocate for themselves and affirm who they are in ways that are relational, you know, that aren't just like, this is who I am, fucking deal with it. But like, oh no, this is who I am. This is my offering. This is like my truth. Relationships get better, you know, and people get happier.
Yeah, because it invites that belonging component to, I can really truly be my authentic self. Yeah. You're witnessing me, we're engaging around this, and I get to belong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of it being one or the other, it's both.
Right. Right. And then I feel like having the language of astrology where you get to belong in a larger container that is also a little less personalized, where you can be like, oh, you know what? That's my fucking Taurus moon. Like, I'm sorry I'm so slow. You know, like, I'm sorry I'm so preoccupied with snacks. It's my Taurus moon. I can't help it. And in like in that way, and I feel like this is true for us who are living with astrology a lot, there's so much grace, there's so much generosity and like humor that we can hold for each other when we're working with astro, because yeah, it's like, you know, my godmother has Mercury Mars conjunct in Aries. Like sometimes she says things that I'm like, oh my God, why would you say that? You know, but then I remember she has that aspect. And I'm like, chill. Okay. It's her astrology. You know, she can't help it.
When it brings a lot of compassion for ourselves, I'm giggling. Yeah. So I'm looking at my other Pisces moon in the house.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah. Yeah, there she goes.
Yeah, I was using my own example. I'm Taurus moon. I'm like so slow and I just need to know I have snacks. And it was like, it was actually hard for me for a long time because I was like, why am I so slow? I just take a long time.
I want to bring this back, not to be like unilaterally focused on postures, but I'm so curious, like with this conversation in mind, you've talked about, and I found this really fascinating, and thank you for sharing your own personal experiences. You've talked about postures that we might inhabit and dwell in as a defense and probably without realizing it. I'm wondering if you also work with postures in a remedial sense. And for example, with the person who had that Mars and Aries on the midheaven, but if you imagine a very different makeup that might lead someone to be more self-protective or more cowering in or bent over in some way, do you actually, you know, encourage them to bare their chest in a way? And maybe what are some examples of, if you do work with postures or movement in that way, what are some examples of postures that people can take on to perhaps remediate aspects in their chart or placements in their chart?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do work with remediation through postural pattern. And that's a lot of my work as a somatic educator, is to help bring consciousness into how we're holding ourselves and what's going on in the body. My teacher, Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, who founded the School for Body Mind Centering, I think has the key and the clue, which is support precedes movement. And if we want to move a pattern, we have to find a support for that movement. And to just try and force ourselves into some other way of being usually will create more dis-ease in the body. So for example, if a person has a more protective posture around their heart, there's probably a really good chance that person is not receiving support for their heart, right? So to ask them to open their chest and bare it all, you know, and put it all out there before they have support is actually, that's doing harm to them. That's asking them to move past a boundary and to perform something, to be perfectly honest. So we might spend a lot of time going into the pre-existing pattern. Like, what does this pattern want? You know, like, how can we feel how this pattern is actually a holding of the heart, a protecting or a nurturing or a going inside for something? If we follow this pattern all the way into its ultimate expression, what wants to happen here? We might need to cry. We might need to break down. We might need to rage, you know, and mourn something. Underneath that, there's probably some awareness and intelligence about what is needed, about the support that is needed. And then we go from there. And then the posture emerges. You know, then it will naturally kind of remediate. But again, for me to use my eyeballs, you know, and look at a person and be like, this is what you need, you know, open your chest, like that feels like doing harm to me.
Thank you so much. I think that is such an important point that I wouldn't have necessarily thought of immediately. But I think what you're saying feels so intuitively right, that, you know, it's a defense and we have defense mechanisms for a reason, and we protect ourselves for a reason. And we have to make sure we're safe before we can open up beyond that.
Yeah. And talking to that part of ourself and asking it what it needs before, yeah, we force or prescribe something on it.
Yeah.
This is so beautiful.
Do you have any last words that you want to say, Renee, with all the wonderful information that you've given everybody? And then, of course, we want to hear about all your upcoming events and good stuff like that.
I feel really excited to be alive at a time when the fields of somatics and astrology and therapy are in such a enormous space of expansion. I feel really excited to be in community with folks who are developing language and practices to support us all in the precarious times that we're in and in the need for evolution that we're in. So yeah, I feel grateful to be on your podcast and connected with all of you and your practices. And yeah, if any of the listeners are interested in what I do, then I hope people will come check out the Embodied Astrology community space. It's really a very, very sweet experiential space for those who are wanting to take this kind of dive into embodiment work and astrology.
Yeah.
And then, goosebumps.
Yeah. And then what about your workshops and conferences and all that good stuff? Because now you have a lot of that coming up as well.
Yeah. So I offer once a month embodied astrology workshops. And those are always on the Sunday after the sign changes. So the zodiacal season changes usually around the 20th of the month. And whatever Sunday is soonest after that, from 11 to 1 Pacific, I offer a monthly workshop that includes an overview of what I'm reading as kind of the most notable transits of that month. We'll always do some kind of somatic practice, some kind of visualization practice. And then usually there's a creative exploration, writing, drawing, moving, expressing of some kind, as well as suggestions for folks to be working in a pretty basic and kind of broad level with their chart, kind of tracking the movement of the current season through their chart, working with the new moon and the full moon, et cetera. We have tea time gatherings once a month. Those are for the tea time community member tiers only. Embodied Astrology also hosts regular guests. We have guest workshops usually about once a month. This year, Katie is offering several workshops throughout the year as well. So we have an upcoming guest workshop with Minerva Arias on May 15th. Minerva is a death doula and death worker. She'll be working with the Scorpio lunar eclipse that day. And Katie's eulogy series is continuing through April. April 10th and 17th are the dates for the next series with her. I'm involved both Katie and I are involved in a astrology pop-up festival at Naropa University in Boulder, Colorado. The festival is called Dreaming for Our Lives. It is an Afrofuturist astrological pop-up festival produced by Ramon Parrish and Regina Smith at Naropa. It has an incredible lineup. Katie will be offering a eulogy practice. I'll be offering an exploration of Pisces through the endocrine system. And hopefully we are going to get really high naturally working with our glands and stimulate a state of wakeful dream in which we can imagine into futures together. And then Katie, Ramon, one of the producers of this festival, and another astrologer named Montague Connolly will be holding a live meditation and conversation as the Jupiter-Neptune conjunction perfects on April 12th. And it perfects around 7:30 Mountain Time. So it's an early morning event. So all of those workshops will be recorded. I believe the recordings will be available at least for a couple of weeks or a month or so after. And yeah, the monthly workshops with me are the most steady thing that I'm offering. And here and there, I do some other stuff. I have an online self-paced class called Your Chart is a Body for folks who are interested in taking a somatic approach to learning astrology. And I'll start a chart work series that continues from that course. So for folks who are at least at kind of a intermediate level with their chart reading, we'll have a chart work series where we work through embodied practice to interpret, you know, people's charts, and we'll just continue kind of workshopping charts in that series. And that'll start probably around the end of May.
Well, thank you so much for being here and sharing all your wisdom. We really, really appreciate it. I know the listeners appreciate it too. So
thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be talking with the three of you. And yeah, I'm so glad to know about your podcast and each of your work.
Yeah. And you can find Kestrel, Eliza, and I at cosmictonic.com. And our Instagram is at cosmictonic. And our Twitter is at cosmic_tonic. And we'd like to thank everyone for being here. And we will see you next time. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.